welcome to episode 41 of Divided by Werewolves. Coincidentally, we are recording this the night before Mitch's 40th birthday. So he is almost caught up to our podcast. Sadly, we have another 2 months until we catch up to mine. And by then, I'll probably need another couple weeks to get there. Spring chicken. My wife is like, he's a baby. I'm like, it's 5 years. She's like, that's like somebody in high school hanging out with somebody in junior high. I was like, we're in our 40s. Why are you even talking about that? Like, what the fuck? Anyway.
I was gonna say, Holly is 7 years younger than me. And I don't even think that's weird. So,
well, like, it's different when you get older, right? Like, if you were 23 and dating a 16-year-old, right. I don't know, where you and I live, that's probably fine. But, you know, most of the time, I'd be like, yeah, I'm not so sure about that. Once you get, you know, whatever, 40, whatever, who cares, honestly? Right. We're all just looking for somebody to hold us, you know, as we head to the grave. That's all it is. We're just it's just lifesavers. That's all it is. It's just another line in the storm. So hold on. You know, try not to drag him down with you, I guess. How's that for romance?
That's it.
So this will go up on, hopefully if I get my shit together, it'll go up Friday. So please, you know, do me a favor and wish Mitch a very happy birthday. One of my absolute all-time favorite people. And of course, I wouldn't be doing the show with him if I didn't feel that way. But give him – share the love that we all feel for Mitchell. Also, what comes out tomorrow is Bayonetta 1 and 2 for the Switch.
Yes, sir.
I'm really excited. I know you're excited. I'm excited. Yep. I played 1, and I think I spent most of the time going, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
No fucking idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I read all these reviews where they were like, you know, Bayonetta 2 is like the greatest, you know, one of the greatest action games of all time. And I was like, well, that may be so, but it's on the Wii U. So,
right. So I can't play it.
Right.
You had a Wii, but I didn't.
So. Good luck with that. So I'm super excited. I may actually play through 1 again. Because I am almost done with Assassin's Creed Origins. I'm sure everybody that watches me stream, and God love you for sticking with it. I'm sure you're happy to be. Sadly, I wouldn't be streaming Bayonetta, but it's been taking a while. We're done with all the locations. We're just knocking out missions and then calling it a day. So I may break into the Monster Hunter just briefly. Not something we need to do together. Just briefly, because I thought Far Cry came out like at the beginning of March and doesn't come out until like the end of March.
I saw that. Like, I thought it was end of February or so, like it always is.
Right.
Because usually it's like around my birthday or the week or two after that. Right. And so I was like, all right, we'll just play Far Cry. And then I actually looked it up the other day because I was like, all right, I need to see when it comes out. So I know when to go get it. And I was like, fuck, March 27th.
That's what I was like. What the fuck? No.
Yeah.
So I may dig around with Monster Hunter a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, one of the things I was thinking of, and I need to get your solemn oath on this, because this is important. This is important, serious, serious business, and I'll pay for it. Serious business. With all the backwards compatibility talk and this, that, and the other, and then with Nordic or whatever the hell they are buying, you know, all what was left of all the THQ assets – if they come out with a backwards compatible Xbox One version of 50 Cent Blood on the Sand.
Fuck yes.
Okay. I was going to
say. Oh, yeah.
We have to play it together.
Okay. I'll be all over that. Absolutely. Right.
Cool.
Day one.
All right. Good. Taste the rainbow, motherfucker. No. All right. Awesome. So that's it for games. We're not really a lot to talk about. We have a bunch of three movies to talk about. So we need to get on that. And the first one, which is, I thought was hilarious. I had no intention of seeing it. I'd kind of seen it pop up from here to there. But then Mitch texted me, while everybody was talking about Cloverfield Paradox, and said that you could fly the Cloverfield space station through the hole, he was going to tear in the ass of a Hellraiser Judgment. And I thought, all right, I need to watch this now. And I did. And then I regretted it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I stopped caring about Hellraiser quite a while ago, as clearly I think everybody, including the people who make the movies, did. I think once Pinhead was in space, I don't know what one was.
Four, the Bloodline.
Okay. And you still kept up on them?
Oh, yeah.
Even once they moved, like, straight, kind of direct to DVD?
I owned them all.
Really?
With the exception of Judgment, yeah. I don't have that one yet, and I'll buy it too because I'm an idiot. But yeah, I have all of them. And honestly, like, I don't mind Bloodline for what it is. I kind of dug the story that they told about how the history of the Lament configuration. I was into that. That's fine. I don't necessarily think they needed to go to the future by the end. I think, you know, having the history and then in present day, I think was plenty for a movie. But, you know, whatever. But then the next one was Inferno. And honestly, it's pretty fucking good. Like, I probably put it third overall.
I think the last one I watched is when we saw how Pinhead became Pinhead. Which one was that one? Is that two?
Yeah, that's two, yeah.
Okay. I think I've seen maybe one more than that. What was three called?
Three was Hell on Earth.
I think maybe I saw that one.
Three's the one where he ripped ass in that nightclub and created the new Cenobites. He had CD head.
Yeah, so the CD's in the head. Yeah.
Okay, so that's three. And then if it had in space, Bloodline would have been four.
Okay.
And Inferno was five. Inferno's probably the third best behind the first two, just because it sort of borrowed from the formula of the first one where they told a story about characters. And it just so happened that the Pinhead and the Cenobites showed up after the fact, or they were there but not the main focus of the movie, whereas like part three almost was a slasher film, which was weird.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, one and two were sort of more character driven, and two you could argue that is not, because they actually go inside Lament configuration and shit like that, and like you said, they show Pinhead's origin and whatnot. But
I think that makes sense, because I mean, like, it was still, you know, like the first one, I mean, definitely it was like the Cenobites weren't just window dressing, like they were an important
part, right,
to the story. So it kind of made sense to show how maybe Pinhead came to be. Like, I thought that was fine. I didn't feel like that was just them kind of wasting time.
No. Like, and the whole thing was like, you know, it's, you know, the first one was they're trying to get Frank, cause Frank got away and all that shit, you know, and all this. And so like, it's, a really good story that just happened to have the Cenobites, you know, is sort of a wraparound, if you want to call it that. But by the end of things, it's completely gone off the rails. I'm talking like as far as the series goes. I don't hate every one of the direct to DVD like sequels. Hell World's pretty bad. Hellseeker was okay. Debtor's not that good. But like the first two or three are not bad. And then you get to Revelation, which was hot garbage. And it was the one, like, Dimension basically were like, look, we're going to lose the rights. We got to do something. So, like, for, like, 2 months, they just threw some shit against the wall and saw what stuck. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they offered it to Doug Bradley. And that's, you know, that's the first one he didn't play Bennett. And he's like, yeah, no, because you're not, there's no heart and soul to this. You don't care about it. So I'm not going to do it, you know, because that's sort of, you're shitting all over everything we've done. Even the bad sequels, at least they try, you know, this is just, you just don't want to lose the rights. So he said no. And we got Revelations. Now, I texted you that right after watching Judgment, like right after I watched it.
Right. And you said, and I remember because I didn't know what you meant because I hadn't seen it and I was going to watch Revelations and you're going to have you. You said that Revelations was shit, but at least it respected the process.
Right. Which I'll stand by that. It's terrible. It is a terrible movie. But in the formula that it follows, at least it's recognizable as Hellraiser to me.
What do you mean? Because, I mean, like it seems like, you know, when I was reading about the different movies kind of getting ready for this, it seemed like the Cenobites or just the Hellraiser stuff seemed to kind of come and go and just almost somewhat be like tacked on to some of these movies as like kind of bookends just to be able to say it's a Hellraiser movie and not to kind of fit maybe the stuff that Clive Barker originally wrote about or the stuff that we saw, you know, in like the first and second, you know, third one.
Right. So, but I mean, basically it's like somebody who is not a good person stumbles upon the box. They open it. They get fucked up. That's the base.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
Premise, right? Well, in Judgment, I'm sitting there, right? And I saw the trailer, and whoever got that fucking trailer is a genius.
I have no idea.
Excited. So the first 20 minutes of the movie is where every bit of the trailer comes from. Every bit of it. That initial before the title card came up, that first 15 minutes where you had a little hope.
Yeah.
The whole trailer comes out of that. And I was sitting there. I put it on. I'm like, all right. So I'm watching it. And I'm like, all right, well, this cat looks like he's straight out of Nightbreed instead of Hellraiser. Who's this?
Yeah.
Oh, it's Pinhead's hell secretary? Is that a thing now?
Right,
okay.
That's what I sure. like, too. I was like, wait a minute. I don't want to see. That's like if you were like, okay, Hellraiser, but in the post office. You're like, what? No, I don't need to see how these motherfuckers sort mail. Like,
exactly. I was sitting there watching it. I'm like, okay. So he interviews the bad people, and then his manuscript is given to a fat dude with a baby face. John Gulager, and he eats it
with children's tears. He doesn't even look like a Cenobite. He just looks like he just looks like a big disheveled guy.
Right. And so he vomits it into this tube that sprays all over the naked girls
with their faces half ripped.
Right.
Off.
And then they decide if he's a horrible person, how they're gonna kill him.
But this is the thing that I don't understand. This is the point. It bothers me that I have to say I didn't understand it. Like, I was like, the whole point of the Cenobites is they're not going. If you're just a regular person, like, whatever, like I teach, you know, history at the local high school and I pay my taxes on time. And, you know, yeah, occasionally I'll have a donut at 10 o'clock at night. But for the most part, I'm a good person. The Cenobites are not coming to you.
Right.
Like, that's
exactly
not who they're looking
that's
for.
That's the point.
So
these horrible people who find the configuration.
And can open it.
And no, yes.
It's not – so there shouldn't have to be some weird-ass civil servant to determine whether this person's bad or not.
Exactly. It completely throws the formula out the window, and it makes no fucking sense. And then it – it goes even further down the piss Mitchell off rabbit hole by, if you're going to do it differently, okay, and you introduce some somewhat cool shit in the first 15 minutes, then the title card comes up, and it's a completely different fucking movie.
Yeah, it's seven.
For the last hour.
It's a horrible take on Seven.
It is a Dollar Tree 7 movie.
Man,
it is so badly done. I shit you not. Until the last 15 minutes, I did not even know they were investigating a serial killer.
Oh,
it complete. I somehow missed that. I was so upset. I was so like, this is bullshit. And
here's
then
the thing that cracked me
up. Oh my God.
Is that here is a serial killer. And first of all, I would like to know, I need to talk to some police officers who have actually worked serial murders. Because it's always the same in the movies, right? Like, they always have this crazy-ass name for them. And it reminds me, you know, like, this one, like, the Perceptor. I'm like, that is a Transformer. He's a microscope.
Right.
He's pretty badass because it's like, well, you know, as a kid, you're like, well, he's a tank. And you're like, he's a microscope. And then they kick the shit out of you. But you're like, come on, Perceptor. I love you. but anyway, And so, like, one of the things that I've always found weird about, like, Japanese games whenever they have, like, a serial killer is they always have a weird-ass name like that. Like, it's not, you know, whatever. Like, and it's not, like, menacing. It's just, like, the name of a job with the word "the" in front of it.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But anyway, like, I always wondered, like, when cops are, like, working a serial killer case. Like, I mean, like, in the case of something like Zodiac, like, it made sense because the guy in his own letter said, you know, he had this Zodiac killer, whatever. But, like, if people were, like Jeffrey Dahmer, he doesn't have a name.
Right.
You know, or, like, Ted Bundy, his name was Ted Bundy. You know, they weren't like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's the nurse eater or whatever. I mean, it was just like, but every movie, they always have some weird, like, he could have killed one person and they'd be like, it's the defibrillator. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, don't we need two murders? They're like, no, Steve, defibrillator. We all decided. That's it. You're like, okay.
Right.
And then in this movie, they're like, he's a serial killer. He's killed however many commandments there are minus two. So at that point, eight, right? There's 10 commandments.
Yeah.
I'm not religious.
Right.
So, and the only people who come to the crime scene are the two detectives. Were they brothers?
Like, see, yes.
Brothers?
I caught on to that way late too. I think so.
So did I. I was like, well, because sometimes like in Lost, Desmond called everybody brother, but they weren't brothers. So I thought, well, maybe he's, and then I was like, no, I think it's actually his brother.
Right. By the end, like one of the last big revelations I had, I was like, oh, they're brothers. I never knew that. I didn't pick up on that at all.
So those two, like, and the token female. And I don't say token female
Lord.
To be demeaning to women. It was just more like they went, there's a lot of balls in this movie.
Pretty much.
Like, this muddy gray template, like, the director of photography was like, here's what I'm going to do. Every lens I have, I'm going to soak it in dishwater, and then we're going to film the movie. And somebody went, awesome. So they're like, let's take this dreary gray ass movie and throw an attractive woman in it, but we're only going to have those three cops. No beat cops. Nobody who would no forensics, no one who might want to, I don't know, put up some caution tape. Just three cops picking up whatever they want. Just moving it around.
Literally no one else at any crime scene other than these three people.
Just finding a ring of severed hands and with no gloves on, unclenching the fists to see what's in it. At one point I thought they were in Canada because I was like, they do things differently in Ontario.
Right. Right. And then, and bless her heart, even having the token female, half the time they forgot to put her in the scenes. She just wouldn't be there. And then she'd show up later, and I was like, oh,
hey.
Yeah, she's still in
this. Like, oh,
yeah,
right, yes, you're here.
That's right. You are still in this movie.
and then
– oh, my God.
Just
oh, my God.
Think.
Okay, they get me one more time.
Yeah,
they introduce a somewhat interesting concept in – the white character, the I guess angel sort of character, who's like, yeah, you know, you can't be doing this. And Pinhead's like, well, you know what? I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want because I'm Pinhead. And then she's like, well, you know, you're gonna suffer for this. And he's like, oh, suffering. It's all I know.
I love it.
Yeah. Like, bring it on. And then he does some shit that he supposedly should not have done. And then she's like, there's suffering even you can't imagine and shit like this. And oh, my God, I was so mad at that ending.
Before we even get to that point, though, you've watched more of them. Have they established that Cenobites are part of just the Judeo-Christian order of things? Like the whole angels and... and demons.
Well, okay,
like, I never really got the impression that it was like a god thing.
Right. And in part three, there's that one scene where he goes into the church and starts spouting scripture, and then he takes the nails and sticks them. It takes pins out of his own head, sticks them through his hands, and acts like he's crucified and says, "I am the way." So, which is the coolest scene in the movie, but it never. Angels are a new thing.
Okay, because this whole – and this whole fucking idea – like, I'm sorry. But this whole idea of – and I'm going to spoil the shit out of this movie because fuck all y'all if after you listen to this, you decide to watch it. As it turns out, spoiler alert, the cop who was totally on the edge was the serial killer. Like, we didn't already see that coming.
Right.
But I guess – no, you know what? I just realized I just answered my question because they were talking about the Ten Commandments and stuff. But I never – I always assumed that the Cenobites were just kind of like there's plenty of – Like Supernatural, right? Like Supernatural has a lot of mythology that has to do with angels and demons, but it also has tons of Monster of the Week episodes, and those monsters have nothing to do with angels and demons. So I just always assumed that's kind of how the Cenobites were. I didn't know that they were like part of some plan, but when the angel lady is like, you can't have light without the dark. I'm like, oh, really? Yeah. That tired-ass bullshit? Like, yeah. That's stupid. Like, that is stupid. You're trying to – they're like, no, this dumbass fucking Dollar Tree Kevin Spacey has to stay living because otherwise people won't know there's goodness in the world. Like, that – get the fuck out of here with that bullshit. Yep. Like, do you know how many people have heads in their basement right now? Like, right now. How many freezers have somebody's fucking leg in it? Like, get the fuck out of here.
Like, and this guy is the one that's so heinous.
Yeah. He's so heinous. And then, oh my God, when all the chains come out and she said Jesus wept, I about turned that fucking thing off. I was like, don't even think for a second that you can try to come back to the first Hellraiser and redeem this piece of shit.
Yeah.
I mean, Hellraiser, like, Hellraiser is a movie that, like, when I was a young dude coming up and I was watching horror movies, like, Hellraiser was the shit. Like, I had a copy of it on VHS that my friend who somehow managed to, like, dub movies. And I wore the shit out of that tape. I can't tell you how many times I've watched that movie, and it still holds up. It's still fantastic. I still love every goddamn minute of it.
Yep.
It affects everything about it. So then to watch this and then have them try to harken back to the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so transparent what they're trying to do. And at that point, anybody who like you and I kept watching, but most people would be like, I'm done. Like, they never would have even gotten to that point.
I'm sorry. I had to cough, so I put myself on mute.
Nope.
But yeah, it's
And then the ultimate suffering was that Pinhead was just a dude.
Yeah, just a homeless dude. Yep. You're not Pinhead anymore. You're a homeless dude.
And he's like, no. Like, really? Wow. Okay. Cool. Yep. Cool.
And then credits. Cool. 80 minutes. 80 minutes, and you spend 19 before the goddamn title card comes up, and you're trying to tell a seven movie.
What? Okay. What did it mean? I didn't understand this. Like, I didn't get it. So at the beginning, they find the guy, and he's like child molester or whatever, and they eat his pages, and then the other ladies come and lick him, and then the guy comes and slices him all up. I thought they were going to make him into a Cenobite. I was really disappointed.
Then
they didn't.
No. So
the seven guy, they eat his pages, and it makes the civil servant guy throw up all over the place and die, and then all the half-naked ladies with the carved-up faces who get the vomit sprayed all over him, they all were like, what the fuck did that mean? Like,
I know.
I didn't understand what that meant at all.
Right. And so, like, and they're like, because – and they had to let him go because they're like, oh, he was in Vietnam and he served in all the wars and all his murders were just and all this shit. And it's like – like everything that he confessed to the auditor, I think is what they called him, the health secretary.
Yeah.
It was all his war stuff. He didn't confess to the serial killer stuff. And that's why when they were like, Pinhead was like, set him free, he'll be back. Because they were like, how are we going to let him go? He's such a horrible person and we have to torture and kill him. This is what we do. And then they're like, well, no, he gets a free pass because that he was doing his job. All his killings and shit.
But that would really make the guy That makes no sense.
That was what I understood, was because they had to let him go, and they're not used to that. They were like, we got the wrong one. Oh, my God. Pinhead's going to wreck our shit. He's sitting in there on that chair, Darth Vader style, with his back to the thing. And it's like, somebody's got to go tell him. I'm not going to be the one to go tell him. Well, we got you, this cat too, right?
Like, well, you know, did anybody check his record? I mean, Jesus, he's a veteran. And then they're like, well, he said he set a girl on fire in Da Nang, and they're like, no, that's cool. It was totally for freedom. But all like it, that, and that also made no sense because the guy with the typewriter was like, he said to the first guy, like, look, we can do this. He basically, you know, the whole, like, we can do this the easy way, we do this the hard way. Like, I already know everything. So right. Why don't you just tell me, and then it's cool. And the guy was like, yeah, shit, I touch girls, no worries. And they're like, sweet. You know, like, so why is it now that this guy is like, no, I only kill people in Vietnam. And he's like, sweet, thanks, man, appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't know that he was, like, the seven guy?
Apparently not. I know.
I see some flaws in their system. I got to be honest.
I hate to say it, but it just might be the final nail in the coffin for the series.
I don't know why. I honestly didn't even, in this day of, and we'll get into this with the next movie we're going to talk about. But in this day of streaming and stuff, like the concept of direct to DVD really doesn't make any sense. So, because people don't buy DVDs, well, you do, I do, but people don't really buy them anymore. So the idea of doing something like direct to DVD just doesn't really make sense. So unless Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime decides to make another Hellraiser movie, which why in God's name would they? Right. I don't see why they would do it.
Mm-mm. I don't either. I think this would probably be it. If the last one wasn't it. I can't see this one changing any minds.
Yeah. Which brings us to the next movie, which is Cloverfield Paradox. And the reason why I want to talk about this one next, given what I just said, is somebody – after Cloverfield Paradox came out, somebody that I follow on Twitter or either retweeted or whatever basically said that it's not – like there's this idea that like Netflix is just like disrupting Hollywood. But are they disrupting Hollywood, or are they basically just what direct DVD has turned into?
Right.
Where they're just kind of taking movies that aren't – nobody's going to risk a theatrical release on.
Right.
And then throwing them up on the service, and people go – you know, the same way that when you used to be like roaming through Blockbuster – and you're like, well, you know, I've seen, you know, Legally Blonde 9 times. So, yeah, whatever. Let's give this one a try. It's same way when you're scrolling through Netflix and you're like, well, I've seen all these movies. All right, I'll watch this.
Right.
Now, to Netflix's credit, and we'll get into the quality of Cloverfield Paradox in a minute. I mean, it was a brilliant marketing move because all week long after the Super Bowl, all the shit that I read – it was just people talking about Cloverfield Paradox, talking about how it was picked up, you know, kind of the idea behind it when it was made, dropping the ad in the Super Bowl, you know, making it available right afterwards. And that's exactly like Netflix. They don't release subscriber information, so you're never going to know whether or not they're getting their money's worth for something that they paid for. But in terms of like visibility and press, and you know, people decided, hey, you know what, like well, you know, let's give it a try, let's look at it, let's watch it. They got that, and they got that in spades for a movie that frankly, in my opinion, didn't deserve it. And so I think it's funny that, you know, so much of the conversation around this movie was whether or not it was any good, and it's almost like it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter at all. Because of the way things are, you know, the way things are kind of done nowadays, the way Netflix does things nowadays.
Like my initial reaction to it was I was excited, and my very next reaction was, holy shit, there are so many more Cloverfield fans than I ever knew.
Me too. I was like, the first movie I thought, I was like, can this monster please find these motherfuckers and eat them? Because they are so – like, this is just Blair Witch for a new age.
Yeah.
Like, Blair Witch was annoying in part because of how, like – I mean, it was kind of supposed to be. Like, it was – everybody was freaked out, and there was a lot of screaming and shaky cam. And then we'd kind of come a long way, and there was a bunch of, like – I'm not saying they're millennials because I don't really know what a millennial is, but I know they're killing every industry with their avocado toast. so, like, I'm not going to say they're millennials, but I will say they're fucking annoying. And so I was kind of like, I need them to be eaten, like, post-haste. And the Cloverfield, 9 Cloverfield Lane, 10 Clover, whatever the fuck the address is, that was actually a good movie.
Excellent movie.
I thought that was a great little, tense little, you know, kind of closed, whatever, three-person play, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
Loved it. So then, yeah, when this came out, I thought the same thing. I was like, are people really this into, like, Cloverfield? Like, I just didn't think that,
no.
You know, because when people were like, oh, J.J. Abrams is doing the next Star Trek or Star Wars, ugh. I was like, okay, so you got a problem with that, but Cloverfield you're all lining up for? Like, okay.
Right.
Like,
right. The other thing to me, and again, we'll talk about Paradox specifically. I talked about this online. It's very interesting to me because Abrams, I don't know how much of a hand he really has in this shit. I think his is a name they just slap on stuff. Especially
his company is Bad Robot. I mean, they produce.
That's true. So. True. But I just wonder how much of it was company versus how much they were like, hey, JJ, have you seen this movie? Do you think it fits the Cloverfield universe? It's your building, you know? And he's like,
give me 5 minutes.
Right. He's fanning himself with fucking $1,000 bills.
You know, and then he reads the script and he's like, give me 5 minutes. And then you just hear frantic ticket to ticket to ticket to ticket. Ding. Right. Done.
Exactly. It's like, they're taking these movies that exist on their own and then throwing Cloverfield rappers on them.
And it's funny because when I was reading up on the Hellraiser movies, that was the criticism that I read about, like, the past three or so before Judgment, was that they were just taking random, you know, horror movies, slasher movies, whatever, and then just throwing enough Cenobites in them to be like, it's, you know, Pinhead shows up and is just like, you know, whatever, give me a Diet Coke, and they're like, it's Hellraiser, you know?
Right. That's the same. See, I think that's what's happening here because, you know,
I agree.
I know 10 Cloverfield Lane started off as a different movie entirely.
Yes.
And what I don't like about that movie is the last 10 minutes. I think it's completely unnecessary. I don't like it. I don't, you know, I didn't like the Cloverfield being shoved in at the end. That whole, whatever the Cloverfield thing is.
What even was it? I don't even remember. I just remember it being a good movie. I don't remember the Cloverfield connection.
Well, she finally gets out. And all the people are there and the shit's going down. And then she gets in a car and there's creatures. And then she tears off up that road towards, and then there's like lightning and you see a giant ship, like a big mothership almost. And that's supposedly the monsters, the Cloverfield monsters ship. I don't know.
They're pretty big. That's like if Godzilla showed up in his ship. How big would that ship have to be?
No shit.
Anyway, yeah, no, so that makes sense. That makes sense then. Okay, I get that. All right. Here's what I wanted to know is like anybody, like, because I mean, this movie was made a while ago, and then I don't know, Paramount, whoever it was just like, well, this sucks. We can't make it.
Right.
And then they're like, yeah, that's cool. And then, like, if any of those executives saw Life, were they like, what the fuck? We had this movie. Like, we had this shit, and we decided not to – and fucking Jake Gyllenhaal and goddamn Deadpool make the same goddamn movie, and everybody flips their shit over it. Like, we had this motherfucker on a shelf. I mean, it just had people nobody knows.
What are we going to do? See if Abrams wants to make it a Cloverfield.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, and so I was like – what the fuck? Like, I was like, okay. I mean, I was okay with it. Like, but then all the stuff that took place on Earth, I was like, I don't understand what is happening. Like, he's just kind of driving and texting, and he seems perturbed, and things have gone sideways, and
yeah,
I don't really get it. And then the very end. And again, we're going to spoil it. Go watch it. Doesn't matter. Whatever.
Yeah.
And the fucking ship comes down, and then the monster comes up and eats it or whatever. I was like, that's life! Like, not... No. I was like, oh my god. Like, so, that was such a shitty twist ending to life, and they do the same goddamn thing here.
Yeah. It's so, yeah. So, and this is where... And the movies, it is what it is. It's a mediocre a sci-fi movie about ships fucked up on Earth. We need to find a new fuel source.
Right.
These people, all these geniuses, go up into the space station and they have to fire this thing, and the thing ends up knocking them into an alternate reality.
Right.
And they have to
good,
get back.
And there were good people in it.
Yeah. No, it's not a bad acted movie. It's just it's completely unoriginal. My favorite part of it was the guy from the IT Crowd, whose name I fucking for some reason
can't. Yeah, and he was the cop in Bridesmaids.
Right. Not Maz, but the other one. And I can't think of his name. But anyway.
With his arm.
With his fucking, that shit was funny. Like, I enjoyed him so much.
But I was like, well, wait a minute, like, you can see his bones. Like, yeah. Shouldn't you not see his bones? Like, shouldn't it just be
right.
like cauterized, like, I don't
listen.
I shouldn't see his bones, and he's just no, it feels fine. It's cool, yeah. You know.
It's an alternate reality. We don't know the rules here, but you know, that's. See, I think that is going to end up being the what this movie does. Unfortunately, is that it presents a way out or an excuse for any future movie that people don't like. Oh, well, that's just another universe. So you don't. That's why it was like that. Just forget that one. We're gonna do another one.
But I mean, it had good things, like the whole idea of, you know, the idea of, okay, there's a war between Germany and Russia, and so and I forget his name, but he was Baron, he was Zemo or Nemo, whatever the
right, right.
Probably not Nemo.
Oh, Schmidt.
He was Zemo in Civil War. Like, I like that guy. I think he's a really good actor. He's on The Alienist, which is a really boring show that they made from a book about a serial killer. So how do you make that shit boring? Well, they managed to do it.
Yeah.
He's in that, and I really like him as an actor. I think he's fantastic. And the idea that in the alternate, the Russian guy on the station is essentially accusing him of kind of being a spy because with the whole energy crisis that's going on, shit between Germany and Russia is about to go down. But then in the alternate dimension, you find out he actually was a spy for the Germans. Like, I really liked that idea.
I did too.
I liked the freaky, you know, they find this woman trapped in this
yes,
you know, like it, with all the wiring behind the walls, like, and she's just like, I don't know who, you know, I know who you are, I know who you are,
right?
But who the fuck is this woman? Like, I liked the idea, I liked the setup, but then there just was all of these, like you said, it was just like kind of unoriginal, these little kind of horror, you know, kind of tropes and stuff, and then all the stuff on Earth, which was basically a guy frantically driving and texting, and we're like, well, I don't know
what his deal is. Yeah, a doctor trying to get to the hospital, right? And there's the monster is attacking, which we're supposed to – it's supposed to be happening during the first Cloverfield movie, apparently.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, like he's on Earth during what we watched in Cloverfield 1, and his wife is the doctor
who's on the space station.
Yeah. And that's who – and so – And so by the end, because if you watch, you know, the last scene of the first Cloverfield film, when they're showing the footage of the guy and the girl on the beach or whatever, and you see the thing come down and splash in the water, that is the escape pod from the end of this one, supposedly.
But then, okay, so sorry, I got some pepper vodka in me, so things are starting to go downhill.
Sure.
When they made the I wish I'd been drinking this shit when I watched these movies. When they made the first movie, what did they intend that splashdown to be? Because I find it very hard to believe
this was a plan.
This was a thread they planned on weaving between all of these movies.
This is why it makes me think none of this shit is planned. He's just tacking shit on. Because it makes no sense because for me, this movie takes place at least a few years in the future.
That's what I thought too.
The first Cloverfield movie felt like present day. There's nothing to lead you to believe that it's any further in the future than maybe a couple of years if you want to give it that. But for me, it was that it's present day.
No, everybody – like cell phones aren't weird.
Right.
I mean it's just now. I mean it's so, whenever it came out, that's when it is.
And so when everybody's like, well, this is the one that ties them together, I'm like, bullshit. Like, it doesn't. Just because they drop a goddamn escape pod at the end of this one into some water doesn't mean it's the same fucking thing, because you could even tell that was an escape pod, first of all. You didn't know what the fuck it was. Something shiny fell into some water. And then let's take into account the fact that the Cloverfield monster in the first movie wasn't even as tall as buildings, and yet
this thing is coming into the like fucking ionosphere.
This motherfucker is above clouds. Okay, this head is above the fucking clouds. That is not the same goddamn monster.
No, it is not. You know what it is? Maybe that monster stood on the shoulders of the previous monster.
Maybe. Or maybe all the tiny ones that had fallen off of the big one were picking it up and holding it above the clouds. I don't know.
But no, you're absolutely right. Like, that is not – that'd be like if in Godzilla versus King Kong, if Godzilla is like in space, like he reaches to the moon and he takes a bite out of the moon and then he throws it at King Kong.
He grabs the moon and throws it at King Kong.
That's the difference between the Peter Jackson King Kong and then Skull Island, where they're like, I thought he was just kind of like 20 feet tall. And they're like, no, he's like 10 stories.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. No, that's cool. Totally. I get it.
But up until the end and the fact that it says Cloverfield in the title, honestly, it felt more to me like a bootleg knockoff or pseudo sequel to Event Horizon than it did anything to do with Cloverfield.
To me, it was life, and it's only maybe because I haven't seen Arrent. I haven't seen Event Horizon in quite a while, but I watched Life, you know, shortly after it came out, which was also a terrible movie. I think we talked about it. We did talk about that.
We did a show about it. Yeah.
And it's fascinating to me just the fact that, like, here's what I want to know. The stuff that Netflix makes on its own, clearly they know about, right? Like Bright probably would have been a lot better if they tried to make it a Cloverfield movie. If they're like, no, dude, there's elves in Cloverfield now. So that I understand.
Oh my god. Like, you know what you just did? Holy shit. So now you just tied fucking Training Day into the Cloverfield universe.
Oh my god, I love it.
Because Bright is a separate Cloverfield universe, which is an offshoot of the Training Day universe, which is also in Cloverfield. It all makes sense.
It's all a plan. Will Smith is behind it all. He's getting jiggy with it.
Every movie is a Cloverfield movie. Oh my god.
We just
don't know
it. We're just not smart enough to realize it. So the stuff that they make on their own, like, I understand that they would have, you know, have some insight into, but the stuff that they buy as like a Netflix exclusive, like, I wonder if anybody watches them, or if just like, if J.J. Abrams just ran a huge con. He's like, hey, I got this Cloverfield movie. And they're like, sweet, what is it? He's like, you know, honestly, I have no idea. I just put Cloverfield in the title. We just bought a movie and we just put Cloverfield in the title. And then Gene won it. And they're like, yeah, absolutely. And they're like, well, what are your plans to market it? And they're like, we're going to buy a Super Bowl ad. Like, after Dr. Martin Luther King tries to sell trucks, we're going to drop an ad for it.
Right.
And then people are going to come watch it, because it's either that or they have to watch somebody burned to death on This Is Us. And they're like, cool. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We hate crock pots.
Well, that's the other thing, right? At first, they're like, oh, you know, we'll probably throw out a trailer, put it in the header for a few months, put it out. And he's like, well, no, these movies are synonymous with viral marketing, so you got to do something different.
Oh. And they're like, all right. We're full of cash.
Yeah, right.
So why don't we just buy some Super Bowl time, and then we'll make it available right after the Super Bowl,
right,
when everybody's drunk and high on chicken wings. They're not gonna know any better. Like, everybody was expecting Tom Brady to like make it off with a 6 ring. They're like, everybody's gonna be depressed.
Yeah,
and then they were like, well, shit, like, nobody's gonna want to watch Philadelphia burn itself to the ground, so they're going to want to watch this movie. Like, honestly, as far as, like, Netflix exclusives, and by that I don't mean something like, you know, Civil War that is completely unrelated to Netflix but just happens to be, you know, that's the only streaming service you can get it on.
Right.
As far as Netflix exclusives go, I have to say, like, made for Netflix, this was probably one of the worst.
Yeah. Sadly, yeah.
I mean, I was not a big fan of Death Note. I mean, I was like, all right, Adam, get it out of your system so we can have an awesome Godzilla movie.
Right. Yeah, right.
Like, I get it. Back the truck up. Take that money. Shit, I would too. If Netflix came to me and was like, we want you to make anything, I'd be like, absolutely. You're going to love it.
Yeah,
it's gonna be great. It's a period piece. It's a romance, but it's a Cloverfield movie. Trust me, it's gonna work. So I get that, but as far as, like, you know, they're kind of like Netflix in house stuff, it was definitely like the worst one I think I've seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Which brings us to the last and final movie we're going to talk about, also Netflix exclusive, although I have to confess that I don't fully understand the relationship that brought this movie to their service, and I don't know if maybe you know.
No, I don't.
And that is it's a movie called The Ritual, and I don't have IMDb in front of me, so I can't speak to who made it and who was in it, but essentially it was four guys go for a hike in the woods in between Sweden and Norway, and then shit goes sideways, as it always does in the woods. Why anybody goes into the woods?
Stay the fuck out of the woods.
But I got a lot of movies to tell you that you should not do that. You should avoid the woods at all costs. So I saw a lot of things about this movie, and I'm curious about, because you texted me about it, and I would like to hear your thoughts on it before I go on.
Sure. So for me, at this point in the year of our Lord 2018, this is my favorite movie that I've seen so far. Okay. All I knew about it was David Bruckner. That's all I needed to know. David Bruckner is a fucking genius, as far as I'm concerned, both as a writer and a director. As a writer, he did Southbound. He wrote the Amateur Night segment of VHS. He wrote The Signal. Director, he did this. He directed Southbound. He directed Amateur Night, the VHS sequel – or segment, sorry. And he did The Signal. Now, Siren.
I know those. What is the Amateur Night on VHS? Because I saw a VHS.
All right. So I'm pretty sure we did this one on a show. That movie, Siren. It's the one with the succubus, and she's like, "I like you," and she
takes the guy. Oh yeah, that one's awesome. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that one.
So
yeah,
that one's his, and he wrote the movie that we watched, Siren. That's based on that. We watched it after the fact. It was one of our first shows, I think, or one of the earlier shows. And then Southbound was another anthology that he wrote and directed. Oh, it's fucking excellent. But it's the one with the huge pentagram that's over like New Mexico on the poster. And it's like, it tells like five stories or so. They all intertwine over one night. It's one of those. Okay. Excellent fucking movie.
I'll have to watch it.
So I knew that, and I was like, well, you signed me up. I'm done. And so The Ritual, you know, it starts off with that flashback sequence, or what I assume is a flashback sequence, or maybe it was just time lapse. I don't know. But anyway, guy in the liquor store, and there's,
it said like 6 months, like when they went to Norway, they said like 6 months later, 9 months later, or whatever.
Okay. So the one guy, the two guys are in the liquor store, it gets robbed. The one guy ends up getting killed while his buddy's scared shitless. He's holding a liquor bottle like he's going to go out and do something, but he's scared shitless. He doesn't act. His friend bleeds out on the floor. So this
being macheted twice.
Right. So these are all, you know, college friends, I assume. And as part of a ritual they do, they all go hiking.
Well, I think what it was is the night that the guy was murdered, they were trying to decide what the next like boy's vacation was going to be.
Right.
And so they had thrown all these ideas out there, and then the one guy who was scared shitless wanted to go into the liquor store to buy a bottle, and his friend had suggested there was some trail in between Sweden and Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I'm getting the countries right, because I'd feel stupid if those were like not connected. and like Zimbabwe and Norway. And so that's the guy who died. And I think they did it like in his memory. Like they decided, okay, for our next lad's vacation, we're going to do it in his memory.
Right. Okay. And so, of course, they all sort of have to decide, well, this one guy wants to go to the lodge, the other guy wants to stay on the trail, this and that.
Because one guy gets injured. And one of the things I liked about it is this idea that you could tell just based on – and this is based on a book, which my understanding is that the second half of the book goes in a kind of a weird place. Like the movie covers the first half of the book, second half of the book. Okay. Comes a weird place. Like you get the one guy injures himself, and you got the feeling that maybe he had a history of kind of being a bit of a puss.
Right. Yeah. Definitely.
And
yeah.
So they're like, well, let's travel through this big ass part of the forest rather than stick to the trail.
Right. And so of course they come upon a cabin, which, as we all know, when you come upon a cabin in some dark, spooky ass woods, you should go in there.
Absolutely.
And
so it's like a Holiday Inn experience.
Right. And so but there's bad weather, and so they go in there and they end up spending the night. They all four have really bad experiences, bad dreams.
One guy pees himself.
One guy pisses himself. He's so scared about what he has a dream about. And then of course the next day they wake up and they set about to leave after they're all freaked the fuck out. One guy's ass naked upstairs, like bowing to a weird wicker statue with no head. And
oh yeah, I forgot about those.
Yeah. And so they go outside and it is straight up some Blair Witch shit. There are carvings on trees.
There's like an elk like stuck between limbs with its guts hanging on the ground. Maybe a bear did that. I'm like, what the fuck do they teach you about bears in England? I don't know. I know the United States is not always first when it comes to education, but at least we know that bears don't tear elk apart and shove them in tree limbs.
Hang them from trees.
Maybe an animal did that. I'm like, is that animal 12 feet tall? What the fuck? That doesn't make it better. Yeah. That makes it worse.
Right. I've never been in that situation. I would try to rationalize it too, I'm sure. That was a bear did that. We should go the other way. There are no bears this way. But so they, they see all this Blair Witch shit and they're going through the woods and bad things start to happen. And then they start hearing noises and you hear this giant, what you assume is a creature. And this shit sort of spirals out of control from there and bad things happen to them. But what I loved about it was, first of all, I love the Blair Witch. I always did. I love that movie. I liked Wingard's version. I loved that whole lost in the woods, scared shitless, weird shit is happening. Everywhere you go is like you keep running into the same shit you've already seen. You're like in circles. Like you're not even sure time is passing like the way it should be. I dig the fuck out of that. And then what I like about this is where the first Blair Witch sort of jerked you off for 80 minutes and never, gave you the money shot. This movie straight up shows you the monster. And
which I thought the creature design was fantastic. It was incredibly disturbing.
Yes.
Incredibly disturbing.
Yes. And I love the story they give for it. Because that makes it all make sense to me. I don't know. Are we going to spoil this one too? Or I don't know how spoilery one to go. If you haven't seen this, please don't listen any more of this shit. Go watch it. But I just love the fact that they all had dreams and even the creature itself, when it would take the one guy, of course, you just hear him. The first one he takes. Who I thought was he was my favorite one. The guy that pissed himself. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
And so I was oh man, come on, him first. Yeah. And the bitch is still alive. Give me a break.
Right. The guy with the broken leg. He twisted his ankle and he's all bitching about how I'm in agony. And they're are you in agony? Or are you uncomfortable? I'm like, shit, I've had that conversation with my kid a million times.
Exactly. So what happens is they get captured by these people. They go back to the cabin and they somehow they end up back in the cabin because, like Blair Witch, shit just keeps, you know, they end up back there. And there's these people, and these people have them chained up. And they're like, he's like, all right, well, what the fuck's going on here? So it turns out these people worship this god. And yeah. He is described, it's the creature, and it's described as a bastard offspring of Loki. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that makes everything make sense because Loki being a trickster,
why he'd be fucking with everybody
dreams. And then the way the one guy, when he's about to be sacrificed, he sees his wife come out of the woods instead of the creature.
Right.
Like everything makes so much sense. If he's the bastard offspring of a trickster.
Right.
And the fact that he can shapeshift and the fact that they do all these things like that is fucking genius. And then having it, the creature design itself was like, I don't want to say you've never seen anything like it before, but it's pretty fucking original. Like it's different.
Like I'd be interested to know if in like kind of Nordic folklore,
right.
It, you know, how much of that design is prevalent there.
Right. Same here. Like it makes me want to research this creature. And I don't even know if it's based on anything in particular. It's so interesting looking. And the whole thing, apparently, at least my impression was like sort of this cabin. It's like it always exists. And like people continuously find their way to it. The creature marks one to become a follower and the other three are sacrificial.
Yeah, and because, they said, like if you worship it, like, you'll live forever.
Right, but only that one guy.
And he's like, well, I don't want to.
Right, right.
Like, no, it's cool.
But like how the witch – they called her the witch, I think, the old lady. Like, she had the same scars on her chest because he woke up with
a – he did on his. That's why – right. I mean, when – I think that was the idea is that he was chosen to be –
the new kind of the next follower or whatever.
Right. The guy.
Right.
And his friends just sorry.
Yeah.
Know.
They're the sacrifices. And then he gets to be immortal and stay there and do this to the next group of poor bastards who show up in that cabin. But homeboy's like, well, I don't want to do that. This is bullshit. Like this is fucked up. And so, you know, he goes up against the creature, which apparently no one had ever done before.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my take on it.
Yeah, and I – here's my – like I – this is a movie where all – like I said, I tweeted earlier this week that like I think I watched too many horror movies because I kept seeing all this love for this movie that honestly, aside from the creature design, I just didn't feel. Like I thought it was a perfectly passable movie, like – but it followed so many already familiar story beats.
Right.
That – I just didn't feel like it elevated itself above what had already been done. Like this whole idea of, oh, they're all friends and you can tell that they're kind of like, you know, I liked all of the actors. I liked how they established very easily just by conversations that these guys have a history together. You already knew who the different players were, where the different tensions came from in regards to those relationships. Like I liked all of that stuff, but this idea of a bunch of mates getting trapped somewhere that had previously experienced a trauma, I was like, well, that's The Descent.
Right.
Like that's how, I was like, and honestly, you know, at the end there, I expected it to be a dream. Like that's how like I was like, okay, this is like The Descent meets kind of Blair Witch. And I felt like it hit so many of those familiar beats off of those movies that I expected it to even go even further and hit even more of those same beats. And when it didn't, not to say I was disappointed, I was actually surprised.
Right.
And then, so I'm not going to say it was a bad movie, but I was just like – I felt like I'd seen it before with the exception of the creature design, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, even just like – you know, it's got some – you know, not obviously it's not in the same vein, but like the kind of the Wicker Man feel of, oh, there's like a group of people and they kind of are, they're outside of society and they worship this kind of old god type of thing. Like there's just bits of a bunch of other movies. And I can't say that that's necessarily the fault of this movie because it is based on a book.
Right.
And it's entirely possible that it's just that's what the book touches on. And so they made a movie faithful to the book. And it just kind of hit on some of those more kind of familiar themes.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, all right, and I agree with you 100%. Like for me, I'm such a mark for monster movies that if you give me a new looking monster and then with that origin story that makes the rest of the movie make sense, like you've won me over. Like I am just,
sure, absolutely.
That is so fucking cool. And so I think that's where my love for it sort of, it resides there. It resides in the creature and how they told that story. And it's just not original by any stretch. It's like I said, it's the Blair Witch, but it gives you the money shot.
No, and I agree. And I think that's my problem. And when I said, like, I think I watched too many horror movies, which is hilarious because I don't watch nearly as many as you do, is this. And, you know, I used to, you know, back when I used to review games, that was always one of my pet peeves about other people who would review games, and they would knock games on saying, well, they're not kind of original. And I always thought, well, that's not a valid criticism because not every game can be groundbreaking and completely original. Like, did they do what they set out to do? You know, did they, did they have a goal in mind? Did they accomplish it? And but then I go ahead and do the same thing here. And so I was kind of, you know, knocking. And I think it's more because like when I watched the movie, I just felt like, well, I've seen this before. And not to say, is it better or worse, but it just felt so familiar. And familiarity, to a certain degree, you want that in a horror movie, right? Like you want a familiar setting because when you bring in something that's unsettling or scary or whatever you want to call it, it's that juxtaposition against the familiar that sometimes makes it so unsettling.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, familiarity in a horror movie is a bad thing because it takes all the surprise and the scares and the oh shit kind of out of it. And so I love the creature design, like at the end, because so many you see flashes of the creature to the point where I honestly thought it was like several different things.
Yeah.
And then when you finally see it in its entirety, I remember going, okay, that is cool.
Yeah.
And so, but yet there was so much of the rest of it around it that I felt like I had seen it before. It just took away from any sort of suspense kind of or surprise, which I think is important when you're trying to scare people because, you know, I mean, anything that's familiar, if it just stays familiar, you're not going to be, you know, shocked or surprised or whatever by it.
Yeah. It's by no means what I call it a scary film. Like it's, you know,
but it doesn't have to be.
Right.
I mean, doesn't have to be. Like a good horror movie doesn't have to be necessary. Like, especially for, you know, folks who watch a lot of them. I mean, honestly, like how many movies recently have you been like legitimately scared and freaked out by?
No, scared, not many. Like the ones that stick with me is the shit that like I have any reaction to at this point. It doesn't even have to be fear. It could be disgust. It could be tension. No,
right.
Something like It Comes at Night, where I sat there on the edge of my fucking seat. Yeah. You know, like shit like that. When I can feel the atmosphere.
Blackheart's daughter at the end when she was upset. Jesus. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, like that at this point. But like scaring me, it's hard to do that, man. The Witch freaked me the fuck out. That's probably the last one.
Freaked me the fuck out. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And honestly, Devil's Candy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Most of that movie being worrying that he was going to like murder his kid.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite list.
And so, but here's the thing, like, I can understand why people like the movie, because I think it's a solid movie. Mm. I think that it was, I think it's much better than Wingard's Blair Witch.
Okay. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Like you said, you actually, you know, there's a culmination, there's a money shot,
right?
There's
right.
a resolution.
Yep.
So I think that, you know, I kind of go, well, if you don't watch a lot of horror movies, it's a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch a lot of horror movies, particularly horror movies in the past few years, you can recognize some of the things that it does well, but mm-hmm. you know, it's just kind of like, okay, you know, yeah, that's good. I mean, it made me really want to read the book, only because you know, my understanding is that the events of the movie are the first half of the book, and then the second half of the book is the guy who survives kind of starting to investigate the Nordic kind of black metal scene and how and how it ties into the creature and this idea of sacrifice and things. And I was like, well, shit, I want to read that.
Yeah. You know, I said the same, like the minute you told me about, we were talking about it briefly and I was like, don't give me any spoilers. But you're like, well, apparently the movie, it's only the first part and the book goes off on its own thing. And I was like, there's a book. And so I went straight to Amazon and I bought it. So it's on the way. Like, I can't wait to read it.
Yeah. And I think it's great. Like, I mean, if this is something like, these are the type of exclusives that I like, you want Netflix to do, right?
Yes.
Like, because, you know, I think that for, you know, for you and I, we, and again, I don't put myself in the same class as you when it comes to watching horror movies, but, like we, you know, we have a certain kind of expectation because we watch so many of them. And most of the people who watch Netflix, they don't have it. And I think this is a perfectly, like, fantastic movie. It's scary. It's freaky. It's not overly gory. You know, there's the, you know, the gore is more, I'm not going to say it's passive, but I guess that's the only, it's, you see the aftermath of it rather than the action of it taking place.
Right.
So for folks who maybe don't watch a lot of horror movies and then they watch it on Netflix, they'd be,
this is going to freak some motherfuckers out. Yeah.
And great. That's fantastic. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for me, I was just kind of like, and I hate to, like, it's so, you know, it's like I just think of the David Spade routine that he used to do in Saturday Night Live. And I was just like, I liked it better when it was called The Descent. And that's so, like, I hate to break it down like that, but that was kind of what I was saying. Like I watch 47 Meters Down.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that one.
Oh, yeah.
And again, like, I was talking to my wife about it and I was like, here's a movie where they try to pull a Descent at the end by having that, you know, Mandy Moore comes up with this whole dream sequence of her rescuing her sister, and she claws the shark's eye out, and then they very gingerly put bandages on her incredibly fucked up leg, and then turns he's like, that guy had like a Band-Aid that you put on a blister, and her leg was like shredded to
and
shit.
Also, how many fucking times does a shark have to bite Mandy Moore's leg for that motherfucker to come off?
Right, exactly.
What's wrong with this shark?
It was the worst. It was the laziest. He's like, ugh, I'm not even hungry.
Right.
You know, and so then at the end, it turns out that she was hallucinating the whole thing. Now,
you saw,
I was talking to my wife about it. My wife, God bless her.
Meters away.
God bless my wife, because I watch these movies in the morning. And then we go for a walk at lunchtime with the dogs, and she has to hear about it for the whole walk. Imagine this podcast every day of the week. But one of the people on it doesn't care. That's my wife. So I was explaining the movie to her, and I was like, and I've talked about The Descent with her a bunch of times. And I said, you know, like, if it was just like, you know, Mandy Moore, like, they do the whole sequence and then she's on the boat and then turns out she's hallucinating, cut to black, I'd be like, awesome. Mandy Moore drowns high as a kite at the bottom of the ocean, shark circling, her sister eaten somewhere else. But they didn't have the balls to go through with it.
Right.
They rescue her. She lives. So somebody saw The Descent, but they saw the American ending.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we want to do. And somebody in that room was like, have you seen the original ending? And they're like, shut up, Todd. You know?
Like, yes.
And it was, you know, it was kind of like when I watched The Ritual, which I don't feel at all like that was the intention. Like, I don't feel like they were like, well, we changed the ending at all. You know, you kind of get to a point where you're like, are they going to – what are they going to do? Are they going to kind of tip it like kind of the more – like darker, more nihilistic way, or are they going to go more the, you know, the kind of the guy kind of lives? So I was kind of waiting to see. And honestly, these days I kind of more gravitate more towards the darker side of it.
Yeah.
You know, like we're all fucked. So, you know,
right. Right.
But I mean, I'm glad that Netflix has it, because I think it's a solid movie for people who don't necessarily watch a lot of horror movies.
Sure.
But when you had texted me, it was like, I'm so excited for you to watch it. I was like, oh no.
And I got that from your response.
Well, because I didn't want to say, like, when I said I already seen it, I didn't want to like say anything one way or the other. I was just, you know, I just kind of like, well, it's always hard because I don't want to be like, well, you know, I don't want to, like, sometimes we won't talk about things because we want to save it for the show. So I didn't want to like kind of get into it because I wanted to make sure that, I mean, sometimes the best parts are like when we're finding each other's reactions out for the first time here.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. You know, I didn't want to kind of spoil that, but I, at the same time, I was also like, well, gee, I hope he isn't thinking like, oh, he hates it. And I don't hate it. I don't hate it at all. Like, I didn't, you know, I didn't regret like Hellraiser Judgment. If I'd never watched that, I would have been totally fine.
I told you.
But this movie, I didn't hate it. And I didn't regret watching it. I just thought it was, you know, kind of curious that as the week went on.
Yeah.
Kind of more people watch it, like reading their kind of reaction to it. So,
yeah.
But, you know, that being said, if you like horror movies and you haven't seen it, it's worth watching.
Mm-hmm. Especially monster movies.
Yeah. Yeah. The creature, like that was.
Don't let the first, like, you know, hour or so sway you. Like, it is absolutely a monster movie.
Well, and to its credit, I mean, I remember the original Blair Witch, you know, it was like, whatever, 85 minutes of screaming in the woods for that payoff. And it just happened to be that the payoff was good enough.
Right. Exactly.
Kind of forgive the stuff that come before. This movie, it gives you enough along the way. Like, you're not left going, really, is it just going to be a bunch of guys bitching at each other in the woods? Like, they give you enough along the way to keep you interested, to keep you kind of wanting to go down the path.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely give it credit in that regard. But guys, ladies, if you're out in the fucking woods and you have a path and some motherfucker in your group is like, let's cut through the scary ass ancient forest that ain't seen civilization since Christ was a child. No.
Yeah. Yep. Roll up your map or whatever paper
Stay
you
on
have.
The path.
Hit him in the nose. No.
Yeah. Like a dog. Just make him feel bad. And then you just go down the path. And you know what? It's funny because I always like criticize. I don't criticize shows because I understand that every show has its own idea in regards to how it wants to reference other bits of pop culture. Like, I remember when Civil War came out, you know, they said they had a lot of discussions as to whether or not Tom Holland should mm-hmm. reference Empire Strikes Back, because, you know, a lot of times movies want to – they don't want to reference other properties. They want to kind of try to be their own thing.
Right.
And my take on that is always like – like, whenever you're in a horror movie, are the people in this movie, do they not have horror movies
in
the universe they live in? Right. Because it seems to me like y'all should know, stay on the fucking path.
Right. In the Ritual Cloverfield universe, are there not horror films that exist?
oh, shit. Yeah, the guy whose arm pops off, he's like, I've seen that. It was on the Munsters. Or maybe it was the Addams Family. I get them mixed up.
Right.
But anyway, it certainly made for entertaining a couple weeks of watching stuff. Like, I mean, that's the point, right? Like, I mean, I watch a lot of stuff. You watch a lot of stuff. Sometimes even just being angry for 90 minutes.
Right. Exactly.
It's a good use of your time.
Exactly. Oh, shit. I'm still thinking about how pissed off Judgment made me. So there's that.
It's fuel for the fire. So the next show that we do will hopefully have a more positive spin to it, because if I am if I feel the same way about Black Panther as I did any of these movies, I'm going to be pretty fucking upset.
Yeah.
And you know what I have, more importantly, like, I know I'm going to like it. I actually been reading reviews going, well, is Mitch going to like it?
Oh, shit.
And some of the reviews I've read are like, it's so outside of like a normal kind of Marvel movie.
That's the best news I could possibly get.
I was like, okay, I think like he likes Black Panther. Comes out on his birthday. They don't mention anybody else. It's not like Steve Rogers shows up and is just like, hey, you know. Like, I think it kind of follows the Marvel formula, but not really. For the most part, it doesn't. I was like, I think this is going to do it.
I'm honestly looking for this one to be the one that tops Winter Soldier for me.
Yeah.
I hate to give it that much praise. Because there's so much hype around it already and so much praise being thrown at it, which oftentimes that turns me off. But we'll see. I have very high hopes for it.
Me too. I can tell you the soundtrack is fucking amazing.
Yeah, I was seeing you tweet about it, and I need to get it.
Yeah, it's really – I mean, I love Kendrick Lamar.
Sure.
Like, I love him, but it's a good – I mean, let me tell you what it is. The fact that, like, there could be parents out there whose kids are super excited for Black Panther and they're like, let's listen to the soundtrack. And those kids get to hear Kendrick Lamar sing Fuck the Place Up repeatedly for like 4.5 minutes. Yeah. Goddamn right. Because those motherfuckers are going to burn this shit down. And that's what needs to happen. It makes me so happy. Like, when you listen to Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, you're like, oh, it's 70s pop rock. It's great. But fucking Kendrick Lamar being like, fuck the place, you know, tear the whatever. Fuck the place up. Fuck the place up. Yes! Yes! Get it! Like, I've had my time. I'm done. Let's let the rest of them fucking burn this shit down and start over, because we done fucked it all up. 10 weeks till Sunday. It's time for somebody else to take over.
I gotta get the soundtrack, man.
But what's funny is it's a fantastic soundtrack, and as a Kendrick Lamar record, it's like, yeah, it's good. But I'm a big fan, so...
Sure.
So that is what we will be doing the next show, and hopefully some Bayonetta 1 and 2 on the Switch as well.
Yeah.
As well as anything else that pops into our little heads. I will say I did rewatch Kong Skull Island and War for Planet of the Apes. Mm. And I love both of those movies even more the second time around.
Yeah. I've seen Kong probably close to 10 times at this point.
The first time I watched it, I was like, yeah, that's good. And then it was on sale. Like, I got it, I think, on Black Friday for like $8. And I wrapped and I gave it to my wife and was like, give it to me for Christmas. And I watched it again. And I was like, that is just a good fucking movie. A good movie. Sets things up for the next one.
Yep.
We are good to go.
Yep.
But anyway, so next couple weeks, please hang out with us again. We'll be covering Black Panther and Bayonetta 1 and 2 and whatever else we decide. So for myself and Mitch, this has been episode 41 of the Divided by Werewolf show. And please, please, please make sure y'all wish Mitch a very, very happy 40th birthday, because we love him and we want to make sure that he gets all the good wishes that he deserves. So for myself and Mitch, thank you so much for hanging out with us. We appreciate it as always. We are on Stitcher now.
Yes, almost forgot.
We're on Stitcher. We're on iTunes. Tell your friends. Send out links. Do whatever the fuck it is y'all do on your social media. Snap, Insta, chat, gram it, whatever the fuck it is.
There it is.
Tweet it out and make sure that your friend, if you like the show, you know, I don't give a fuck whether you review it, but if you like the show, tell somebody else that you like it. Maybe see if they want to like it too. And we will be here in the next couple of weeks with episode 42. So thank you so much for hanging out. We appreciate it as always. Good night and have a good evening.